Darren Kelly has job spot. Darren, what have you got today for me?
Got three in total for you, John. We'll start with SolGrid, a solar PV company in Loughrea, are looking for solar PV installers, an apprentice electrician, lead administrator and marketing executive. CVs to HR at solgrid.ie. Visit solgrid.ie/jobs or call 091-335-335 for more information. Ashford Castle Estate are hosting a recruitment evening on Thursday, March the 14th at the Lodge at Ashford Castle between 4pm and 7.30. For information or to book a place on the evening, reach out to humanresources@ashfordcastle.com. Walk-ins are also welcome. And Proverum, a startup medical device company, is looking to hire a permanent manufacturing technician. Apply with your CV to hr@proverummedical.com. And if you need any phone numbers or email addresses, please call our reception on 091-770-077. Search hashtag GoWeJobs on social media or go to goabfm.ie/jobspot.
Thank you, Darren. You're simply the best. Now, though, I want to say very welcome back into today's programme. And I have a very special guest who has just come into studio from a hot off the train from Dublin. And that is renowned activist and journalist Horia Mossadegh. Horia, you're very welcome onto the programme today. Thanks for joining us.
Thank you very much for inviting me.
It's great to have you in today because I know you're an Afghan woman and a human rights defender, and you're giving these frontline defenders lectures across the country, and it's the turn of Galway today.
Yeah, thank you so much. I would like to thank Frontline Defenders for this opportunity and to invite me to come to Ireland and give this annual lecture.
Definitely. Now, this series of lectures takes place annually, but talk to us about your background as an Afghan woman and human rights defender and journalist and the work you've done over the past few decades.
Yeah, thank you. I have been a journalist and a war reporter for almost 9 years, and then I started in early 1990s, and then I have been covering a civil war in Afghanistan, and then I had to leave Afghanistan, and I went to Pakistan, and then I continued working on Afghanistan and also in South Asia. So then by early 2000 I moved to human rights because I think as a journalist I couldn't do enough of highlighting what was really happening and the depth of the issues. So because as a journalist, I was believing that I'm very much driven by the headlines rather than, to cover the depth of the issues. So as of year 2000, I have been working proactively on the human rights issues, and I have been working with the war victims of Afghanistan, mostly women, who were refugees and also displaced, and then I started also working on various other human rights issues, including now I am working on the protection of human rights defenders and journalists at risk.
Because it's been a turbulent few years in Afghanistan with the Taliban takeover.
Yes, unfortunately, in August 2021, Taliban returned to Afghanistan, and during this, since they have returned to the country, they have started implementing harsh forms of Sharia law, and Afghanistan is remaining the only country in the world that girls beyond the year 6 are not allowed to go to school. Universities are banned, and women are also banned from working in humanitarian sector, in government offices. There were mass dismissal of women from across Afghanistan, and the only sector that women are allowed to work is health, where they can only provide health assistance as doctors or nurses to the other female patient. Other than that, women have been wiped out from almost all aspects of social life in Afghanistan. And at the same time, as soon as Taliban returned, they dissolved all the laws, including the constitution. So currently we are living in a country with almost no legal framework. And everything is based on Sharia, and that Sharia is also based on the interpretation of the Taliban, not really what actual the religion is.
Has there been a big destruction of culture and history as well in the country?
Yes, certainly. I think, I always say that Taliban is a group that their brand is about anti-culture, anti-woman, anti-art. So these are at least the three issues that Taliban are highly scared. We don't know why they are scared of women. We don't know why they are scared of art and also culture. They have destroyed the biggest Buddha statues back in 2001, and they have been hitting and killing even, you know, comedians or singers, and they have been torturing singers. They are destroying the musical instruments. Music is such a big part of Afghan culture. Poetry is such a big part of Afghan culture. And unfortunately, with the Taliban, they are destroying everything, and they are not allowing even celebration of our New Year. Nowruz have been forbidden under the Taliban. So, yeah, I think it is not just Afghan women that are suffering because of the Taliban's presence in the country. It's also our culture, our identity, and also the art is dying under the Taliban.
Because it is a part of the world that has a huge history. We can go back as far as the Persian Empire and before that as well. But where do you see this current regime finding its origins and the problem starting? Because it used to be a very progressive society. Do you put it down to different colonial powers meddling in the country, or where does it stem back to?
Well, I would say like back in late 1970s, during 1979, when Russia invaded in Afghanistan, then the Western countries, particularly led by the United States, they started supporting the Islamist groups to fight Russia. And the only way that they could make these groups and also to seek the general population support was to tell them that Islam was in danger, and to support these Islamist groups to go. And I still remember as a child that the same Mujahideen groups that were supported by the West and by the US, they would kill teachers, they would burn schools, they would attack government civil servants, they would attack any woman who would be dressed in a modern way. Like, I'm coming from a country where I have seen my mom, my aunties, my sister, they would walk with their miniskirts in Afghanistan. In Herat, which is not even the capital, I have seen my mom driving, you know, through the provinces with being modernly dressed up with her kids, and no one was even looking at her. So we come to a country where women are not even allowed to walk on the streets wearing a full, you know, covered burqa. This is all because the way that, you know, countries such as United States are playing their role in destruction of our identity and supporting the worst of the worst groups and the most radical groups in our region. And if you look at the Afghan jihad during 1980s, you will see like the most notorious warlords, the most notorious Islamist groups were supported by the United States, such as Hizb Islami, Hikmatyar.
Now, you've received numerous awards, including the 2007 National Human Rights Award in Afghanistan, the 2012 and 15 Women's Rights Defender Award for Amnesty International, and your most recent one, the 2020 Award for Afghan Women's Network, for your outstanding work on women, peace, justice and reconciliation. What has your work led you to in modern-day Afghanistan now? And what's it like on the ground at the moment for you personally and for your extended family, if there are parts of your extended family still there?
Yes, certainly I still have very close family members who are living still in Afghanistan. Like when I talk to them, like many women and men, especially young people, they are saying that there is just an atmosphere of hopelessness.
Yeah.
There is a situation that you cannot see any light at the end of the tunnel. Like if, you know, women, there is a simple rule of gender apartheid in Afghanistan. When women are not even considered as second-hand citizens, many people are talking about apartheid in South Africa. But if you see what's happening in Afghanistan, if there was any word to describe beyond apartheid, that would apply to the situation of Afghan women and girls in Afghanistan under the Taliban. If they are not allowed to work, if they are not allowed to walk on the streets, if even they are not allowed to go to the beauty salons, even beauty salons were closed. Since Taliban have taken power in August 21 till now, they have issued more than 120 edicts all of them against women, to stop women, to limit women, to make sure that women are not living. Even if they could take our breathing, they would do that.
Are international agencies and governments doing enough to help in terms of your NGOs and charities, feminist organizations, countries, the UN, the European Union, the United States? Are they doing enough?
No, they're not doing enough.
What more can they do, or what do you want to see them do?
Yeah, the biggest problem is, like, since August 2021, when Taliban took control, US alone is giving $50 million cash on a weekly basis to the Taliban. And it has reached to over $2 billion since Taliban have taken control. We don't know what happens to that money. But then when you look at the amount of support you're giving to the women rights organizations or to the women organization is nothing. What I have also seen, especially, I'm absolutely not just disappointed, I'm disgusted the way that the international community, especially the Western countries, have made a mockery of the international law and international human rights mechanisms. What's happening in Afghanistan, what happened in Gaza, what happens in other parts of the world, it is totally a mockery of the international justice. It's a mockery of the international human rights standards in the hand of the powerful countries.
You mentioned Gaza and the whole Gaza-Israel conflict. Are Ireland doing enough in that regard? We have a very powerful voice this week with St. Patrick's Day. We'll have a seat in the Oval Office in the White House. What would you like to see Ireland do?
Well, I'm really proud of Ireland. And you know, I follow Ireland politics because of the support and voice that you are giving to the people of Gaza. And I really think that more need to be done. And these voices, I know two of your excellent MPs who are raising the voices of the people, including people of Afghanistan and Gaza, in the European Parliament. And we want to see more. We want to see more European countries to speak out and to talk about the atrocities that are happening around the world. I think what is really happening as an Afghan is we as victims, we should not fight for the international attention. I should not stand up in the face of an Ukrainian and tell them that we suffer more than you do and I want the stage. An Ukrainian should not stand in the face of a Gazan, in the face of a Palestinian to tell them that we suffer more or you shouldn't be on the center stage. I think everyone should have that platform. Everyone should have that identification or recognition of their suffering, and more need to be done. But certainly what is happening in Palestine these days is it is a war crime. It is ethnic cleansing. And I think if there is any word to describe the worst form of human rights violation after World War II, this is what's happening in Gaza at the moment.
Do you find there's an understanding in Ireland, given our colonial past, and also what's the Afghan community in Ireland like at present, and are they quite vocal on this?
Well, when I met with so many Afghans, especially some of the Afghans, they came last night to visit me when I was giving the lecture in Dublin. So, first of all, they are really, really happy the way that Ireland has treated them. And the welcoming that the Ireland people have been and so welcoming and warming with good treatments that they have. But at the same time, I think we need to do more. I think, unfortunately, I can't say like it is enough. You know, I think we need to see more, and we need these solidarities because not many people are having solidarity with us. And the moment we see, like, for example, people of Ireland, you're showing solidarity, we all rush to you, we all run to you, and we all want you to do more. And this is because we don't have many allies, we don't have many people standing by us, especially after the Ukraine war. Unfortunately, Afghanistan war have been forgotten. The situation of Afghanistan have been forgotten. And then with what's happening in Gaza, then slowly you see that Ukraine is off the media. And God knows with other disasters, slowly, like, I think this is why, like, I thank to your radio for giving us the voice, for allowing me to come and speak. Yeah. Like, you are not run by the international media headlines, but you run by humanity.
And in terms of St. Patrick's Day weekend, we will have a seat in the Oval Office with the President Joe Biden. I remember a few years back, I believe it was a former Taoiseach of the country, Enda Kenny, gave an empowered speech to the then President, Donald Trump, about St. Patrick being an immigrant and about the building the wall and all that. Would you like to see a similar impassioned speech by our current Taoiseach, Leo Varadkar, to the President, Joe Biden?
Certainly. I think it is really, really important, especially that we are living in such an unprecedented time where hatred is being promoted, where division is being promoted, where racism is being promoted. I think these type of speech, and coming from someone who has such a power religiously and such a position religiously, I think it makes a lot of difference. We really need to see those messages, to talk not only to Joe Biden, but to many other presidents, to many other politicians from around the world, to tell them that in the 21st century, we cannot afford to promote racism and division because you want to win and you want to cover up your failure by blaming your failure on refugees, on migrants, or on people of other ethnic groups.
Horia Massadik, award-winning human rights defender indeed and journalist, thank you so much for joining us on Galway Talks. You're giving your lecture this afternoon at the University of Galway. People can get details and register online at frontlinedefenders.org and they can get more details there. What time is it all kicking off at this afternoon, do you know?
I think it's around 2 o'clock, yeah.
Brilliant. We wish you all the best with it. And how are you enjoying Galway before I let you go?
It looks really beautiful. It's a beautiful city and I'm really enjoying it. Yeah, thank you.
Horia Massadik, thank you for joining us on Galway Talks. Still to come on the programme today, the little later time than usual, we'll have trending topics with our colleague indeed, Joshua Byrne. We also have a look at a film being produced by the Time Lord Society in the University of Galway indeed. And we have Music Mornings with Jake Carter. All that plus lots and more between now and 12 midday. A very good morning to you. And a very good morning to you. Welcome back into today's programme. We're looking at trending topics now. I'm joined in the studio by Joshua Byrne. Joshua, good morning.
Morning, John.
Thanks for joining us today. We're looking at social media, Joshua, and there seems to be a trend and a growing desire for authenticity, and it's being rewarded on platforms. Explain.
Yeah, John, I suppose it's an algorithm-based thing where there seems to be this trend on social media where algorithms are rewarding, authentic creators and also brands who are using authentic creators to advertise. And I suppose we know that social media as well has always been this battleground of showing, you know, who's doing better. And it can be quite a toxic place at times, with people kind of, you know, creating an online persona that is completely different from their, I suppose, you know, in-person persona. And this trend that we're seeing now, I suppose, is really just, you know, social media rewarding authenticity and real people. And I feel like from an audience perspective as well, that audiences like ourselves are getting sick of you know, very, you know, perfectly created personas and stuff like that, growing tired of stuff like that and welcoming, you know, more kind of real creators.
I suppose the big question is, why now?
Well, I suppose it's just, you know, from the beginning of social media, that for so long people have used social media as a platform to, like I said, you know, create those kind of, I suppose, fake personas or even, you know, altered online personas, and as well that brands would use social media to create ads that just, you know, weren't representative of normal people's lived experiences. And why it's happening now is, I'd say that there's shifting demographics. You know, there's the younger generation who are using social media have grown up with it, and they're very, I think, aware of the kind of faker content you can see on social media. You know, having grown up with that, they have an eye for that kind of thing. And I think they welcome, you know, content that represents their lived experience a bit more, you know, just real people. And I think for the older generation, it's user fatigue, with, you know, inauthentic content. that they've seen for so long, really.
Mm. Now, how are companies and apps and different brands adapting to all this?
Well, they are really utilizing user-generated content. So instead of filling your feed with content that they've generated themselves, that they've made, you know, like this, you know, perfected content, what they're doing really is letting users do it for themselves. So when you have someone who is just a normal person reviewing, whether it be, you know, it could be a pair of football boots or some sort of tech device, if you have a normal person like myself and yourself sit down and have a chat about it, it's, I think, more likely to be very well received by people, you know, scrolling on social media rather than, you know, someone who's very obviously paid to sit down and say, oh, you know, well, such and such is brilliant. But yeah, I think brands are adapting to it in that way that they're almost kind of taking a step back and letting users of social media platforms almost do the work for them in that way, with reviews and that kind of thing. And also honest reviews that do point out flaws and stuff like that as well, because I think, you know, that's very welcome rather than, you know, someone just telling you how brilliant something is.
Absolutely. And there's been different changes as well in terms of laws. And people have to say, this is an ad, this is not an ad, this is sponsored, etc.
Absolutely,
etc.
Yeah, yeah.
Is this good overall for social media, the way they're going?
Yeah, well, look, to be honest, I think it's a positive shift in, you know, algorithms and that kind of thing and trends. But yeah, I would say that it's overall a positive shift. But you do have to be mindful of negatives in this kind of thing as well. One thing you don't want to do is, you know, there's such a thing when trying to be authentic, there is such a thing as oversharing, because, you know, obviously being more real on social media and, you know, even being slightly vulnerable, possibly could be well received, but it's also, there's also the possibility of oversharing and maybe just being a bit too personal and putting, you know, way too much of yourself on social media and for brands as well. That, you know, it mightn't be overly well received if you're, I suppose, too personal. So there is also that, you know, that line between your personal life and your online life as well. That you do have to draw, which is obviously up to individuals and brands. But yeah, I do think it's a positive change and kind of shift in dynamic on social media overall.
Mm-hmm. All right, that's all very good. Joshua Byrne, thank you for joining us on Trending Topics. Now, I want to change tact altogether because I'm delighted to say I'm joined in studio by the director and assistant director of the Time North Society in the University of Galway, because they're producing a film based off of the 50th anniversary special of Doctor Who, and they both sit opposite me now. Dean McDevitt and Aoife Joyce, you're both very welcome into studio today. And Aoife, I might start with you first, because you're from the city and you're from a family, the Joyce family, that has a lot of pedigree in sporting terms in the city.
Oh yeah, definitely. Like my great my grandfather Jimmy Joyce, he founded the Corinthians Rugby Club, so definitely. Wow. Been in Galway my whole life, so yeah.
And we're not talking about Corinthians today, because we're no. talking about Doctor Who. But who wants to take it, guys? Talk me through, where did this all come about?
I think Dean's pretty good at talking about what he does well.
That's all I do is talk, I'm afraid. yes, so we're the Time Lord Society from the University of Galway. We are Ireland's only Doctor Who Appreciation Society.
Only?
Wow. None else in the country. And we do events kind of twice a week. We do a screening on Tuesdays and games nights and that on the Monday.
Okay.
But anyway, for the film is called Tin. As Time Lord Society turns 10 years of age this year. So we wanted to do something to kind of mark it and to sort of bring sort of a celebration to the last 10 years of the society. So we tried to get as many people as we could from the last 10 years back to do some sort of thing for the film.
And was that easily done? Because I know Doctor Who fans are fanatical.
well, yes and no. We had our very first auditor, River Byrne, who is a character in the film, played by the wonderful Luke Madden.
Oh, yes.
The reason why he's played by Luke Madden and not by himself is because he lives in Japan.
Okay.
So trying to track him down was interesting. A couple of our members live in London and kind of all over the world. So getting them involved was no easy feat.
So talk me through it. As someone who mightn't be up to speed on Doctor Who, as I'm sure a lot of our listeners aren't either, what is this feature film that you've produced going to consist of?
So it is essentially, it's based on the 50th anniversary, but it's kind of have our own spin on it.
Okay.
In the 50th anniversary, you have two of the Doctor Who's meet an earlier version of the Doctor Who. It gets very confusing.
Timelines usually do.
Timelines are very confusing, yeah.
Okay.
And then they kind of work together to solve whatever issue the film was based on. For us, it's working a little bit differently. So we have the current two auditors, the current auditor and the previous auditor. Auditor is like a chairperson for the society. Meets our very first auditor when the society constitution begins to disappear, and we're not too sure why, but turns out it's because River Byrne is having second thoughts about starting the society in the first place.
So it's very personal to your society itself.
It is, yes. There's a lot of kind of in-jokes and little references and stuff here and there to different members and societies and all the rest.
But I love the amount of work you've put into it as well, because I know you yourself, Dean, built a TARDIS from scratch. And I asked, did you do art and design or what did you do? But what's your background?
I have a degree in maths and physics.
And how does that help in building a TARDIS?
Well, it's the trans-dimensional engineering, of course, making it bigger on the inside. Kind of the maths, I suppose, would help me make lines and all the rest. It was just sort of after I finished my degree, I just thought, why not build a TARDIS?
And a lot of Galway features in it as well, Aoife.
Yeah, there is. We have a lot of scenes are from the college, the University of Galway, and we have a few that are then outside around Galway as well. So it's great to see a bit of Galway represented.
And it's been screened on this day week indeed, the 19th of March, in the IMC cinema across from us at, is it 8 in the evening, did you say?
8 o'clock in the evening, yes.
And a portion of the funds goes to a very worthy cause as well.
Yes, it will be going all towards, about 250 will be going towards the Irish Cancer Society.
And that's a cause that's close to your hearts there in the Time Lord Society in the University of Galway.
It is, yeah. A lot of our members have been either directly or indirectly affected by cancer. So I think now that we have the ability to maybe raise some money for it, we just kind of thought it was the right thing to do.
Yeah.
Definitely.
Yeah.
And is it accessible for people who are not Doctor Who fans? Or?
Of course, yeah, absolutely. We kind of poke fun at ourselves an awful lot in the film,
really
so
do.
You really don't have to have any sort of background in Doctor Who. If you just want to laugh for an hour, come along.
I think it'll be worth the spectacle if the costumes are anything to go by this morning. That you'll be worth the spectacle on the screens anyways. And very reasonably priced, €8 for tickets and then 11 if you want to throw in a meal deal as well?
Yes, and those tickets can be purchased online currently at the Society's web store. If you look at University of Galway Societies and you go into the web store and purchase them there.
Brilliant. Best of luck to both of you guys on it. Dean McDevitt, the director, and Aoife Joyce, assistant director.
Thank you.
Thank you for joining us on Galway Talk. Still to come this morning, we have Music Mornings and we have Jake Carter playing live in studio. That's next. And a very good morning to you. Welcome back into today's programme. Delighted to say I'm joined in studio by very talented musician Jake Carter. Jake, good morning.
Good morning. Thank you so much for having me in.
It's all happening here today, Jake, between Doctor Who and journalists and everything.
It's all go.
We're going to music now, Jake. Tell us a bit about yourself for people who don't know you in Galway.
Yeah, so I'm originally from Liverpool, as you can probably tell by the accent. It's not from around here. And I moved over to Ireland now 7 years ago, I think, in 2016, 2017, around then. And I've been singing and bluffing my way since then. Basically, I've been on a lot of different TV shows, Dance with the Stars being one of them in 2018. And I've just released my latest EP, which is a 5-track EP of songs that I've been working on over the last couple of years, kind of, as cliche as it sounds, finding my sound, if you like to call it that. And we released it there on Friday. And yeah, so it's all going good. Life's great at the minute.
And you have a lovely tone to your voice as well. And you've been compared to the likes of Harry Styles and Tom Grennan, but you're very much distinctive in your own right as well.
Yeah, completely. I mean, obviously, a lot of people might know listening, but if they don't, I have an older brother as well called Nathan Carter, who is a very well-known country singer. And a lot of people, I guess, would have just thought I would have just gone down the same road and doing that type of music. But growing up, I was very much into like pop music. I loved bands like McFly. They were huge when I was growing up. And yeah. I kind of got the end of Take That on the kind of end of their success, I suppose, and I was always influenced by that type of music, so that kind of comes through then when I'm songwriting and performing and kind of wanting to carve my own path as opposed to just doing what everyone's expecting me to do.
Absolutely. You've been releasing a lot of music lately as well.
I have, yeah. Music is my main passion. I mean, I do love doing the likes of musical theatre and I do pantomimes every year and stuff like that. But music is the one for me. It's what I love doing and it's what kind of my heart and soul goes into, if you like. So I love songwriting and I love kind of, I see it as a kind of form of therapy as a lot of songwriters do. And I love recording music and the latest EP, actually, all of the five tracks were recorded with a new producer that I found a couple of years ago in Dublin called Richie McCall, who has been amazing. I really find that he kind of gets where I want to go with my sound, and we've been working together now songwriting and recording music for the last couple of years, and it's great when you finally find someone that kind of clicks with you, if that makes sense. And he's a great lad and I'm delighted to have worked with him on this latest EP.
Well, definitely. Before we hear that, a blast of that, we're going to play it here this morning, the full produced version. But you're going to play a song live in studio for us. This one's called Milk and Honey.
I am, yeah. So this is a song I released, the first track I released off the EP, actually. It's a song called Milk and Honey, and it's actually one of my favourite tracks off the EP. I'm a huge Beatles fan, and I was always obsessed with the Beatles. And John Lennon had a posthumous album called Milk and Honey, and I was reading up about this one day before going into a writing session, and then this song kind of just came to us. So it goes like this, and it's called Milk and Honey.
Staring out the window of my eyes. Oh, it's so much easier to stay inside of our own head, searching for some paradise. Life's a game of chance and we just roll the dice. Milk and honey, somewhere sunny. Stay out late, no cares, no worries. Clear your thoughts, forget your flaws. You've built these walls, so open up. Milk and honey, somewhere sunny. Stay out late, no cares, no worries. Clear your thoughts, forget your flaws. You've built these walls, so open up. Dreaming of a starry violet sky, wishing for a moment I could close my eyes, and maybe I'll wake up and realize that this is just a fairy tale in disguise. Milk and honey, somewhere sunny. Stay out late, no cares, no worries. Clear your thoughts, forget your flaws. You've built these walls, so open up. Milk and honey, somewhere sunny. Stay out late, no cares, no worries. Clear your thoughts, forget your flaws. You've built these walls, so open up.
Well done, Jake. Well done.
Thank you.
Beautiful song. Do you have any gigs coming up in the next while?
We've actually just did our first headline gig of 2018 there in the Academy in Dublin. It's been a long time since I've been doing our own headline shows.
Yeah.
So we did that there a couple of weeks back, and we're just planning in the minute at basically doing a tour towards the end of the year right around the country again. I love Galway. Galway is one of my favourite places to visit. I actually spent like four birthdays here on the trot from when I was, I won't say 17 because I was probably a little bit too young to be in Galway drinking then. But yeah, I love Galway and I love visiting here. We did a gig in Munro's years ago. So hopefully now we're planning and we'll hopefully be getting back to Galway in the next few months.
Well, and is the city you mainly focus on, or where do you spend your time?
Well, I love kind of the whole environment and the culture in Galway City. When you're nothing to do, and you can go for a drink and no one bothers you, and there's people from all over the world, yeah. And it's just great. I love going there every now and then.
Now, your new EP, Don't Forget, talk to me about that.
Yeah, so Don't Forget is the latest single off the EP, which I call Point of View, which, funny enough, everyone thinks the EP is called Point of View, but I purposely called it Point of View because it was kind of a play on words. Like, each song is about relationships and different stages of relationships, so that's why it was called that. But the latest single, Don't Forget, was a track that I wrote with a Dublin band called Key West, who I've admired for years. I used to sing one of their songs live on the gigs, actually, called Something Beautiful, and I met the lads then, and we kind of got on really well, so we started doing a bit of songwriting, and this track was written probably about 12 months ago around this time last year, and it's one of my favourite tracks off the album. It's got kind of a very bandy organic pop sound, which I love that kind of production, and yeah, it was just one of them songs that kind of came together really, really quickly, and it just gelled, so it was great.
Brilliant. Playing us out with Don't Forget, here is Jake Carter.
Say something, 'cause you're gone away in the morning. There's no time to waste, nothing's gonna change, so one of us should say something. They say distance never really works, you're only gonna make things worse. So could never forget. So dry your eyes, say goodbye, don't ever forget me. I hope you never regret me. So darling, just
and thanks to the wonderful Jake Carter there. What a lovely man as well. Still to come tomorrow on the programme, We have a very busy programme packed already because we'll have an update on the Chew Mother and Baby Home situation. As well as that, we hear about independent deputies looking for a carer's motion to be brought and implemented by government. We'll have the chairman of Galway GEA, Paul Bellew. He's talking about the doubleheader that's coming and some special events happening in Pearse Stadium this weekend. We'll have a number of Americans who are in town to look ahead to Paddy's Day and all their activities in the Galway region as well, including in Connemara and Galway City. We'll have more Cheltenham reviews with George McDonough and the crew from Boyle Sport. Andrew Carney joins us from Tuam because there's a nice little event happening and a lovely play happening there as well. So all that plus lots of more coming up tomorrow on Galway Talks. Up next is Ronan Lardner with the Livewire. Have a very good afternoon.